The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You guys, welcome to another episode of Just a Sip. I have someone in the studio today that I have had a long-standing beef with because of a character she played on the hit show The Game. I love her on the Upshaws. And she is one of my favorite Black ladies on the Black Lady Sketch Show. Please welcome the talented Gabrielle Dennis, everybody. My God, how are you today?
I'm amazing. How are you? I'm loving the background. I'm loving the ambiance. Oh,
you know I try to make a cute house. You know I try to do it right.
I'm digging the digs.
I'm not going to lie. When they first told me that Janae wanted to come on Just a Sip, I was like, no. We are not having it. No. I have a long running beef with Miss Gabrielle Dennis. But
with me or with Janae?
By the way, it's so crazy. Once you play a character that people have a visceral reaction to, as I did with Janae, is that a mind screw for you?
It is. It's weird because so many people, I mean, thank gosh, there's a gazillion things to watch on television. And I've been blessed enough to play a numerous amount of characters. But some people don't know your resume. They're just like, I know you as Janae, or I know you as Whitney, or I know you as whatever, insert fill in the blank. So it's just funny the way that people respond to that character specifically. Like you said, you have longstanding beef with Janae. But I'm just like, but guys, why? Why? People that had an issue with her character had an issue.
Oh, 100%. Well, when I first heard that there was a reboot of The Game, I literally text Mara Ackle and I was like, that's all great, girl, but am I calling Gabrielle or are you calling Gabrielle? Because Janae, we got to run this story back.
Hey, I would love a call, you know, but what's funny is the last time we saw that character, she moved to New York with her fiance. So who knows? She might be living her best life unbothered.
Right. It's so crazy because you bring up your resume and y'all better check these credits. First of all, you have consistently been working in The Game for a while, but not only working in The Game, the parts that you play are so lush. And I say lush because, you know, you might have a part here and there, but girl, you went from Rosewood, you've been on Black Lady Sketch Comedy Show, you were on The Game. It just seems like your career has been steady. What do you attribute that to?
Consistency. Literally, I was just having this conversation with someone yesterday. It's just like, it's a game of numbers and probability. It's like, if you keep at it, eventually you're going to crack the code, you know? And I have been told no way more than I've been told yes. But it's that probability of those yeses versus those nos of how long I and how hard I've been trying to edit. I've been just, you know, cracking at the tunnel. Like I've been going through the tunnel. It always reminds me, there's this cartoon drawing where there's the guy, he's digging through the tunnel to get to success. And he's like this close and it's on the other side and he gives up. Like he was right there. Had he just went for like another 2 days, he would have made it, you know? And so that's kind of how that visual is always in my head, is like, you just don't know how close or your next opportunity is. And also in this business, it's work begets more work. So I've been very fortunate and blessed to kind of fall into the lap of this, these situations where word gets around and people want to work with me because of either my professionalism or what I bring to the table as far as just like good vibes and And it's been a blessing. Like, I don't take it for granted. I pray for humility, and I'm grateful every day, because it's no small feat to get where I am. I mean, when you look at the number of people trying to be in this industry, and when you look at how many people are just in the union alone, and the percentage of people who work, luckily that percentage has gotten bigger because the work has gotten more, because we have the likes of so many platforms to see content every day. So that's what's really great.
But it's so interesting too, because I tell this to people all the time, and especially, like, you know, the actresses that I know that are not Black, it's always like, you know, but if they want me, they probably are going to want X, Y, and Z, or this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't even know how worse the Black actresses have it, how small the pool is, and how, you know, once you're in, you're in. But in order to break into that small pool of working Black actresses that can transition from, you know, predominantly Black roles and TV shows to, you know, I'm going to call it the wider side, because that's how it kind of sort of is. I'm like, it's kind of harder for them. It really is.
Yeah. The thing is, it's like going, when I started my career back when I was doing Janae to like now, it's like, it's such a blessing to see how many of my friends and peers are working both in front of and behind the camera. So like, things have definitely grown a lot from when I first started, because it was, at one point, it was the one token Black person, or if you cast one Black, you can't have another Black in any of the lead capacities. So it was always like that weird dance that we were doing. It's like this elephant in the room that everybody knew what it was about, but, you know, we wouldn't really address it. But now with things like Black stories and Black content being welcomed and accepted and proven time and time again that people want to see them, I think the industry's taken a huge turn around the corner of like accepting and understanding that not only do we need to be represented in front of the camera, but in the writer's rooms where the stories are starting and to be told. And if they can't be told on the page, it makes it harder for the Black artist actor to come in and give the authenticity that it really truly deserves. So I think it is, it has been a challenge, but it also gets to a point where we have to accept and be unapologetic and say, hey, listen, I was just talking to a group of actors. We were at dinner the other night, and on this project I'm working with, it's like, you have to go in and be unapologetically yourself, because even when it's that open ethnicity situation, if they want a white kind of broad vibe and energy, they're going to cast the white woman to do that. You bring your authentic Black realness in and all of that threading that makes you special who you are. And at that point, either that is going to work for that role or it's not. But at the end of the day, your goal as an actor is to win that room. Damn the job. Get that audition. Like, make a fan of those casting office. Make a fan of those producers. Because if you continuously bring yourself to the room, eventually you're going to find where to put you, where it makes sense. And I think that is something that is the freedom we've had with seeing so much of our content on television. It's finally feeling that comfort and that freedom to just be ourselves, and that it's okay, and that it's embraced and it's welcome. And they'll find the place for us, or we go find and create for ourselves. So I think that's what's been beautiful.
And that's what's been happening with Insecure and Black Lady Sketch Show and Atlanta. Like, you have all of these people being able to create these authentic shows that have, you know, authentic writing behind it, and Black writers to give Black voices to Black characters. And you're starting to see this love from everybody. I mean, if I say Insecure or Black Lady Sketch Show, everybody knows what it is. You know what I mean? Like, you cannot not know what it is. If you're white, Black, whoever you might be, you just appreciate it for what it is.
1,000%. 1,000%.
I wonder this, because you said something interesting, that we did this dance for so many years because we all knew what was up. Why didn't we say anything a decade ago or two decades ago?
Things were being said, but at the end of the day, whoever holds the rules to the game, you can say what you want, but it's hard to play the game when you're not the person making the rules. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because you can keep changing the rules.
That's true.
I think it just took steps to get to the point where we are, where we have people of different backgrounds and color variations and experiences that are now in positions that call the shots. Because as an actor, even to this day, I can have an opinion all day long. No one cares about what I have to say. It's more about, you know what I mean? Like, we're just yes men. We stand where we're told and we do what we say, you know. But at the end of the day, everything starts in the creative process. So what's so beautiful about a show like a Black Lady Sketch Show is even we say all the time, Black people were not a monolith, right? So when you look at our writer's room, the diversity in just Black women, it's all Black female writer's room. But even in that, the amount of diversity that is in that room allows us to tap onto experiences from all over. So I think what's great is, like I said, now you've got creatives like an Issa Rae, who started out, again, to the platforms that we have now. She started off online, and look where that got her now. We've done the work. We've proven, we've asked. But no, we're no longer asking anymore. I feel like now we're in a position we're taking control, and we're telling our stories, and people are getting on board with it. They're now asking for the content. They're now wanting to see the stories and the beauty of the culture, because it is celebrated, and it is something that is refreshing to see, that when you look at like the decades and decades and decades of the same type of stories being told over and over again, the audience's palate is diverse and it wants more, you know? That's like eating the same meal when you go out every week, every Friday. Like every now and again, you want to throw in a little extra flavor, a different variety, you know? Give me the menu on the left.
By the way, I have to know, because I watched a Black Lady Sketch Show, and I wonder if your friends are ever like, bitch, did you tell that story about that time to the writers? Because that seems like, you know what I mean? Like, that seems like us. Like, did you go ahead and tell the producers?
No, like literally as an actor, I have zero say in the writing. Like, we'll get on set and we can improvise, but I do know a lot of, like, for example, like Ashley Kobach, who's also a star on the show, like she does, her and Robin, I've heard them say that it has come, some of those do come from like personal experiences. But I think what's great is they start as kernels of ideas in the room, and then everybody gets to chime in and create the sketch as far as the writer's room is concerned. So I'm sure there's kernels of people's personal life that they've told, and they probably kiki'd and chit-chatted in those writer's rooms. Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall in the writer's room and just kind of know the tea. But it's so fun that it's so, there is no identity in the sense that it's not so specific, that it's not relatable to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of, like you said, if the girls are like, wait, did you tell? They're like, no, I had no idea about your story, but it's just perfect that it's relatable, because we all have kind of a similar experience and how we react and respond to things, you know?
Yes.
So it's a lot of fun.
It's so fun too. If you guys have not seen the show, what I love about this show is every sketch is about 8-ish minutes. Like, it's not like, it reminds me of what In Living Color was, you know, what Mad TV was back in the day, where, you know, you could sit down, you didn't have to watch 10 episodes before, you could skip through the episodes. But my favorite thing about the episodes is you always know the character. Like, we all have that auntie that tried to go to the club. We all had the girl who played MASH in high school and was scared about what she was going to get. Everyone knows somebody. So for me, Black Lady Sketch Show is what the Wayans brothers were creating, but with an extra layer.
Yeah.
Because we all know the funniest bitch on Mad TV was Deborah Wilson. You know what I mean? Like, the Black lady on Mad TV was Deborah motherfucking Wilson, who did Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
She was a queen.
And you know why she probably stood out is because she got to play stories, again, that you weren't seeing other places. And that's not to say, obviously, right, take away from talent, because Deborah Wilson is like, hello, Deborah Wilson. Like, we would love to have her on the show. But again, our uniqueness helps bring that extra oomph to the table. And she was doing things that no other person on the cast could do, because they were unique to a Black woman's experience. So I think what's also so genius is even the title of the show, A Black Lady Sketch Show. Robin's whole purpose at the beginning was for it to be not the story about like Robin, Thede, and friends. It was more of like, this is a representation of a Black woman. Pick a Black woman, pick a Black story. Yeah. It's not defined and narrowed down to one experience. And the hope that this is one of many future shows that put Black women on a platform like this. So this is a Black Lady Sketch Show now, but hopefully there would be more a Black whatever in the future. And I think that's what's so great.
It's interesting, because I wonder if you get the same thing that I do. And, you know, I'm on a daytime TV show. We talk a lot about things. Race comes up in conversations. And just for instance, the other day, we were talking about this woman whose mother had a written affair with Charles Manson while he was in jail. And then she now has one with another convicted killer named Chris Watts. And my comment was, yeah, it's kind of strange. It's always random white ladies who are having these kinds of sort of like assorted, you know, affairs with murderers. And the white lady on my show said, you know what? You are absolutely correct. And this fan tweeted at me and she was like, you know, how would you feel, you know, if I said a random black, it's always a random black woman. And I thought about it and I was like, I don't know, but I'm not afraid to talk about race. And the way I talk about race is not in a racist way or a way to oppress somebody else. I talk about it for comedy. Do you guys ever get the people that say, well, what if we did a white lady comedy show? Would you guys be mad?
Yeah, like before, they don't even watch the show. It's just the title alone turns some people off. And it's just like the word black is such a strong, powerful word. It's so strange how it turns people's, it just upsets their stomach and it makes them mad. And they're like, why is the word black on this title? What if there was a la la la? This is racism. This is this. And it's like, sir. Ma'am, have you watched the show? Like, relax, take a second to breathe. And it's also the fact that shows like this have to exist. Like, you never explore the reason why our show has to exist now and why it's doing so well. It's because there's been centuries of us, like, not having
getting a seat at the table.
Yes. So, like, I was one of the many Black women who got to test for SNL a few years back when Kenan Thompson had made the point that, where are the Black women on SNL? So it's like the fact that these questions have to be asked, you shouldn't be annoyed at the fact that Black people want a seat at the table or want to play. Take that same energy and explore why the conditions are the way they are for a show like ours to have to exist.
Yes.
Because without our show, no one would ever get to experience the layers and the range that us on this show have been able to do. Like, where else would I have been able to have the opportunity to do that? You know? So all 100. Hell Robin Beattie, all hell Issa Rae, all hell HBO for giving us this opportunity and this platform to do things. And I've been at this game for a minute and I have not gotten the same amount of love and feedback and appreciation for my talent and range and to be able to do and to even apply a lot of my skills to one show. So I feel like you sit over there and be mad if you want to, but you could also remove some of that angst and sit back and learn something, enjoy something, laugh at something. Because a lot of our fans are not Black women. I see white women, white men, gay, straight, all and everything in between. People love our show because some people have the ability to sit and enjoy comedy and content without feeling the need to staple race and hate and all of your feels onto it. Just like I can sit and watch shows that don't have Black people and enjoy it. I don't have to be like, otherwise SNL wouldn't have lasted all these years, or Mad TV and all these other shows that did not include us to the level that we are on this show. So yes, we're one of a kind. We're the first of a kind. I'm very proud to be a part of this show. And if you have a problem with it, I feel bad that you won't allow yourself to be open enough to experience this magical ride, because it is very fun.
It is
something that you even get to learn. Yes. You know, some of our white fans are like, oh, I learned something.
Yes. No, it's honestly like, when I think about, first of all, I didn't know you were that funny. I had no idea, because everything is so serious. Like, you know, Rosewood, and then, you know, even like, you know, Luke Cage, like everything, everything is so dramatic. And you give it to me. You give me Cicely Tyson. But I had no idea on the other end of that you were serving me Eddie Murphy. I had no clue. So how hard was it for you to kind of prove yourself on that comedic side? Because a lot of times we like to put a bitch in a box. Let's be real.
Yes, we put a bitch in a box. The beauty is working with Black women who are so supportive and like cheering you on. It all began with a text call that I got from Robin, who 10 years prior, we were in stand-up clubs together. We were doing the comedy route. And although my background is in stand-up comedy, sketch comedy, like you, most people don't know that, because that's not what I've been put in TV, in the masses for, right? So there was a moment of hesitation, or like, not fear, but like, oh, will people accept me? Like, will people accept me with open arms? Like, she's funny, or she's in a funny show. How does she fit in? Because I felt like the oddball, because everyone on the cast was known just for comedy, right?
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of that at the beginning of season one, but like people are cheering me on or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, like let's roll with it. Like, I never doubted that I could be funny because I know I was, but it was, I was in my head about like, well, what are other people going to think about it? Right.
Yeah.
So, but like in season two, I feel like I ripped that bandaid off because once I realized people were accepting it and like loving it and like wanted more of that, I was like, okay, now let's get into it, you know? So Robin's been such a great cheerleader and like, rooting us on and like being so positive and supportive and believing. She's like, oh girl, you could do any and everything. And I know this. And she's like, you were so funny when I used to watch you do stand-up comedy and like do sketch comedy and like the world needs to see this. And I am so forever grateful to Robin for even remembering me from those many years ago and to like,
yeah,
give me this opportunity and just completely like let me loose, like just go do your thing. So
yeah. Did you put yourself in a box a little bit? Because I sometimes find that for me, when I've done something for so long, like, you know, I'm the funny Black guy on the daytime talk show that says funny things and then I leave. But now as the host of the show, I found that I was my own wall. I put a wall up. I never wanted to look at that chair, that first chair, because in my mind, I wasn't good enough. I was just the funny friend in the second chair. And when it came to taking that responsibility, the biggest hurdle was getting over was the one I put up myself.
Yeah.
So as somebody who has been put in a box that's drama, drama, serious, was it hard for you to let yourself off that box and fully explore what you knew you already could do?
Yeah, because like I was saying, I think season two was the time I fully let loose.
I can see that. I can see that.
Whereas in season one, I was ready. I was excited and all those things. But because I went to performing arts school, like you were expected to be a triple threat, sing, dance, act, play an instrument, creative, write, do something, right?
So where'd you go, by the way? Where'd you go?
I went to the School for Creative Performing Arts out of Ohio, where? Cincinnati,
and,
Ohio.
And where'd you grow up? Ohio as well?
Mm-hmm. So I came out into the world like, okay, world, are you ready? And then the world keeps away at you a little bit more like, no, we're not ready. We don't need this. Like, you know what I'm saying? So you get less and less confident or less and less like, oh, well, nobody needs that. So let me strip off this layer of talent or confidence or whatever. And you eventually get to the point, like you said, you're in your own way to an extent that I caught it. And I said, you know what? Days before I got that text from Robin, I hit my people up. I said, I need to do some comedy. Like, don't send me any more drama. Like, I need to get back in comedy because I'm fading away. I'm losing myself as my artist. I don't want to be to the point where I'm in a box where I can't get out of it. And I kind of could see that that was the direction I was going because I couldn't get into, I was doing mostly like 1 hours and like a lot of the drama stuff. And it was to the point where it's like, I see where this is heading and I don't like it. So let's make that shift now. And I was so grateful, like, my gosh, like the Robin text literally came maybe 24 to 48 hours after that call with my reps. And it's been great because since then, I've been doing a lot of comedy now, but there's this dialogue like, oh my gosh, but you're also, we remember you from such and such. You can do it all. And it's like, yes, that's the whole goal. Like I went to a school that said I can do it all. And it's like, I look up to like a Jamie Foxx. He is the epitome of an artist who is
100%.
Able, he's done music. He's done sketch. He's done stand up. He's had his own sitcom, films.
The Oscar.
Oscar winning films. You know, like, that is where I want to be. And very rarely do you see a woman get to explore it all. You know,
for sure.
And the sky's the limit. I'm just starting.
But it's also very interesting that I'm finding now that a lot of comedians downplay their credentials. Because you have comedians that went to performing arts school, that can sing, that can dance, that can act, that were in Pippin, that were doing the absolute motherfucking most. And it's the men mostly that just fall into the comedic thing and then take on the persona and leave all that credential behind. So I'm loving that. You're like, no, I can do it all.
Yeah. And I want to do it all. And that's kind of like my career mission now is to not be pigeonholed, to not be put in a box, to be allowed to explore, even if I have to create these opportunities myself. Because it's like, I sing, I dance. I mean, I hit you with a Tombe Potomerankly side jeté, okay?
Honey.
I had dance training. I thought I was going to be in a whole ballet situation, you know, growing up. That was my initial goal as I was a dancer first. So it's just like, why can't I? Like, why can't I brush off these skills or like explore stories that tell and that touch on the things that that can bring some of those skills to life. So I would love to play a ballerina in a movie, or to play a pop star in a movie, or
yeah,
a film or whatever, like a short. It doesn't matter. I just want to be able to explore and stretch my muscle and not feel like before I'm to the point where my muscles won't want to move anymore. I would like to do what I do.
So, do the damn thing. We need to do the damn thing before we can't do the damn thing.
Exactly.
I'm very lucky that my audience not only welcomes Black, you know, voices and stories, they really do accept it and they want it and they ask for more. And the comments that I get are so amazing about, oh my God, I had no idea about this actress. Can we have more, you know, people that we haven't been introduced to at the E audience, which is the purpose of Just a Sip.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now that I have another Black voice here, I would like for us to talk about a concept that may take a little bit of finessing for most people to understand.
Okay.
When Black people say, for example, HBO f***s with Black people.
Okay.
I don't mean that they have one or two Black people on the network and we're running around and like we're doing like, you know, whatever, and, you know, living our best life and getting our coins and then leaving. When I say somebody f***s with us, they get it.
Yeah.
They understand the mission. They are down for the equity that we have been missing out in the former years and want to bring us up. Am I saying that right when I talk about HBO, Home Box Office Network?
I definitely feel like it. Like, there's a Black woman that is staple HBO, like signature. You know, when you think of Insecure, that is a signature HBO series. Mm-hmm. And that started from the mind of a Black woman. And HBO had the wherewithal to understand, even when it was just a little kernel of a show on YouTube. And East is also an EP on a Black Lady sketch show. So the fact that a network like HBO allows a show, has allowed a show like a Black Lady sketch show, just that title, they didn't touch it, they didn't change it.
Nope.
To exist on that platform speaks volumes, not only to the network, but even when you just mentioned your audience, like your white audience or your broader audience that isn't Black. I applaud audiences that are open and that get it, that don't want to just look at everything as like a race thing. It's like, I want to be entertained. I don't give a damn who you put in front of me. I'm open to whatever that entertainment that makes me laugh, that makes me cry, that makes me feel something. So I think it's just a beautiful thing when audiences get on board, and I'm not sure who's leading who. I don't know what chicken or the egg came first. I don't know if it's the audiences that are leading the networks, or if it's the networks that are leading the audiences, or if it's kind of like a front where everybody's moving together.
Yes.
But it's a beautiful thing when we can sit and have conversations, or when I can look in the comments and I can see the diversity of the people that are watching our show specifically. And even having the opportunity to be on a show like The Upshaws, Netflix with their whole Strong Black League campaign. Like, that speaks volumes to where that exists a few years back. So things are happening. People are f***ing with us, you know, but because we have been with in different ways, like, you know what I mean? Like, in a bad way, negatively for so long, that it's great to finally be at that point. And I feel like we're just at the beginning. Like, the amount of creatives that are watching this, or that are watching the shows that are with Black creators behind them, that they're in their baby steps. They're still in college, or they're still interning, or they're still whatever. Like, we're just at the crust. You know, with so many more layers to go. And I'm so excited to see where these stories will just grow, and these opportunities will grow. Like, I tell my friends, I feel like we're experiencing our own little renaissance, because the amount of people that are working in the diversity of the content is not just comedy. It's not just drama. It's not just TV. It's not just film. Like, we're finally getting a chance to put our hand in everything. And I think as an audience, we benefit when we diversify. Mm-hmm. What's available to us.
We benefit as a culture as well.
We were packaged as dangerous, problematic, poor, ratchet, this, that, and the third. And yes, we have all of that, as do any other race. Do you understand? The problem is, everybody didn't get packaged the same way as one thing sent out all across the world. And now the world hates Black people because that's how we've been packaged to be afraid, you know, be afraid of Black people, be untrusting of Black people. But it's like now when you have people that and characters that are just such a variety, I just think it helps experience, like you said, with the culture. It helps that people can come in and understand that we're not all monolithic and group, and we don't have to be, you don't have to be afraid of us. Like, we have great stories to tell. So I think it's a beautiful thing.
I dated a white guy and I loved him. He was great. He was super nice. He was a little bit older, and we went to a party, and, you know, I'm an open book. Like, I'm like, if you don't understand something about my culture or about my friends, just, you know, ask me. I'll totally tell you. You know what I mean? Well, one night we went to a party. The conversation started. He had too many Pinot Grigios. And the conversation about Black representation in TV and movies came up. And, you know, somebody had the same idea about how we were only represented in one way on TV and film for so many years and da 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 da. And he said so innocently, and I knew where he was coming from, but I heard it from a mile away. I was an earshot away. And I almost like ran in like slow motion, like, no. But he said, well, you guys took the jobs and took the acting jobs. So isn't it kind of sort of your fault too? Like, don't you have a hand in it? And I know he wanted to start a discussion. It wasn't like a, ha-ha, motherfucker. I was so happy that he was getting involved in the conversation, but I was so scared because you never know where it can go. And, you know, my friend was very honest with him and said, you know, a job is a job. If you're an actor and you're trying to get out of there and you're trying to get out there, you're going to take a bag. You're going to take a bag. But trust and believe, Black creators were bringing a variety of Black stories. The only ones that Hollywood wanted to buy were Boys in the Hood, were Jungle Fever, were all of these moments that showed Black America how they saw it. But they weren't buying, you know, Soul Food until, you know, they were ready. They weren't buying Proud Family at the beginning. They weren't doing those things. And, you know, we got home and he was like, that's really interesting. And I'm like, yeah. And it's the truth, because we have been trying to tell ourselves as a diverse people, but the people in charge weren't buying it.
It's the same with music. Like, there's so many like positive rappers or people that have a message, but the ones that are getting the money and the promotions and the deals and the whatever usually aren't speaking to that. And there's nothing wrong with some ratchet. There's nothing wrong with, you know, a variety of that. The issue is, like you said, at one point, there's only one story that's continuously being told. It's like, well, what about us over here? What about me over here? Like, forget that we're three-dimensional, you know, and all of our stories wants to be told. You know, my grandmother wants to tell her story. My niece got a story to tell, you know, and it's just like, it's weird because, like I said, I grew up in a performing arts space where everything was colorblind. We would have a quote unquote Black or white cast. They weren't called Black or white cast, but like we would eventually have like a white Annie and a Black Annie, or a white Cinderella and a Black Cinderella, because, or an Asian one and a Black one, or whatever. It was because it was about the talent. And so when you go out in the real world, I wasn't ready to be put into a box or to be told no. But I think that training helped me understand and look at it like it's a collective experience. Like, like I said, it has to be the audience and the artist and the creatives and the, you know, all of that is, it's all intertwined. It is all intertwined. There's the art and then there's the business side of the art, you know?
And by the, that's the most important part. You have to remember, look, of course, let me put my hands on my knees, drop down on this is going to sell because that's what people want right now. And it's unfortunately that, you know, we can only have one her at a time because there are so many more hers, you know, out there are so many other women and artists who don't talk about those things. But right now, that's how people are cashing in. So do you sell out to break in, or do you stay true and not make any cash as an artist?
You know, it's hard because I think it's each artist. Some people selling out isn't selling out to them. That's your version of selling out. My version is get that bag. This is my art. This is my voice. This is whatever. And I'm authentic. Just because you don't agree with me twerking or popping or selling dope or whatever, like that's how I used to survive. Like, people sometimes do have to strip, sell drugs, do crime to put food on their table. So it's not my role to judge that person. There's an audience for that person in their art, right?
Yes, yes. But,
so that person, that doesn't consider them still selling out to them. It might be from somebody else's perspective, but the problem is this person's perspective needs something that they can touch to, right?
Yes.
So we're not too busy judging everybody. Give something for everybody to enjoy. Then that way people can stay in their lane, mind their business, enjoy their thing, and quit pissing in the cornflakes of other people doing their thing. You
know what I mean? Yes. Yes.
So I think that is where we're trying to grow. And I think like how your boyfriend at the time had asked about like, well, why do you take the jobs? Because there's always that hope in the art that we'll get to that point where I'm not just taking the crackhead mom or the drug dealer or the whatever. It's there will be more opportunities. And it's unfortunate sometimes, especially back in the day, you realize, wait, there are no more opportunities. And I've been fortunate to have a variety and a range of roles that I've played. And there have been times I specifically turned down things, but that's because I was fortunate enough to be at a space in my career where I was confident yeah. to feel like I can turn that down. And that's not where you always are going to be as an artist. So you have to start somewhere. And some people, that's important to them. And some people don't care. They just want to work. You know, and they can separate art from their personal life. So I just feel like as a society as a whole, it'd just be nice to get to a point where everybody can do their thing, as long as you're not hurting people, and just do their thing and not be beaten over the head about it. You know, there's a whole buffet up in here.
Well, oh, 100%. I always say, I don't care what they doing, as long as they're not trying to pop that on my man and they're paying their W-2s. We Gucci, okay? So right. I'm gonna sit here and I'm gonna enjoy all of this, just not by my man, and pay your W-2s. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing, and I saved the best for last, because I feel like the last thing I would ever want to do in my career as an actor is play somebody that everybody loved. But you did it twice. You took on Tina Turner, which, if you were born anywhere between 79 and 89, 92, your mother had that Tina Turner album and she played that loud in the house on Saturday mornings. And that Private Dancer would come on when it was time to mop the floors and clean your room, because that was her jam. And you also played Whitney Houston, which again is another huge icon. And you played them in the age of Black Twitter.
Let me show you where I was on premiere night of A Golden Brownstone. I was in the corner like this. I was so afraid of Black Twitter. Like, but luckily, they didn't rip me one. They were so supportive. They were like shock and awe and like very supportive and like, oh my gosh, you got her mannerisms. Da, 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 da. Like, you're killing it. We love you. La, 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 la. I can't believe, you know, I had my doubts, but you proved me wrong, you know. So that meant a lot. Like, Black Twitter is... It can be the beginning and the end. Because I think this is going to go well, and I'm going to continue to work, or this is the last time y'all are going to see Gabrielle Dennis. So that's kind of that was the vibe. But it went really well, but there was a lot of pressure, because at first you're excited as an artist. You're like, oh, I got a job. And you're like, oh, it's Whitney, you know? And it's, I mean, the woman went from Whitney Houston to Whitney to Nippy to The Voice. Like, she was known as The Voice, right?
Yes.
So the challenge of that role was going in, like you said, playing someone that people know already, or at least think they know. And I think that was what's most challenging. People were extremely opinionated about their favorite artists, right? Even though they may have never spent a second with them or know what goes on behind closed doors. Like, even as people that aren't famous, a lot of the stuff that people put on social media, that's their public persona. Right.
Exactly.
We don't know what's going on behind closed doors, right? Because we only see what you let us see. So when I had the conversation with the director, and his first thing out of his mouth was, well, we won't be wearing makeup most of this movie. I said, oh, you're rude. What do you mean we're not gonna wear no makeup? I said, Whitney was beautiful and I need some makeup, okay? And he said, no, I want to strip down all of that glamour, that superstardom, because the extent of my knowledge of Whitney Houston was she was this mega star, not just a star, mega star, internationally known, right? So to tear all of that down and just strip, who was she at home in the living room? Who was she, you know, with her man, with her child, with whatever? And that was very important to just try to make her relatable as a human being, which is a girlfriend or a mom or whatever, somebody that I can relate to better. I never can relate to Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
She is the only person who has ever experienced Whitney Houston's lifestyle, right?
So, right.
that was very challenging. And then when I got the call to play Tina Turner, I was like, so wait, y'all just want me to be the biopic bitch? Like, so what we're not about to do is pigeonhole me and be that chick. And I had concerns, and they called me several times. I finally was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. I was like, it's just one episode. It is what it is. But I was nervous. I was nervous that people are going to be like, okay, bitch, we gave you a pass on Whitney, but like, Whitney, what you're not about to do is that you just want to play all of the queens.
What's next? Aretha?
Right. Who do you think you are, honey? So I was a little nervous that I didn't want to like take the good graces and like, you know, over
100%. But by the way, you were one for one with Black Twitter. Don't go ahead and get back up at that mound. Don't get back up and try to strike again, because you know they are looking for it. And people who aren't Black think that Black Twitter only criticizes non-Black people. But let me tell you something. Black Twitter is like, we're like Black people. Black people are harder on other Black people, because the first thing that we learn in life as a Black person is you should have known better. You know, like the first thing you hear from your parents is you should have done better. You should have known better. So I feel like we carry that on from generation to generation. And Black Twitter, like, we will come for one another easier than we will with other races or other backgrounds or anything.
Yes. And I think also just the appropriate behavior, I guess, of like social media is very opinionated, and people are going to say their opinions, especially if it's comfortable from at home, you know, in your car, wherever you're giving your opinion, blasting off, being loud and opinionated, you know, because nobody's there to talk to you in real life. Because I know I've seen things people would say, and I was like, you wouldn't say that to somebody in their face, you know, like that's just,
exactly.
you were raised better than that. You wouldn't be that rude. It's just interesting. It's just one of those things that you just gotta take it to the chin. You know what I'm saying? But luckily I survived that whirlwind, and people love the Tina Turner performance. They love the Whitney Houston performance. And even the people that were angry at the announcement, like when they announced who was playing it, I was getting, oh, that's what made me nervous about premiere night, because people were mad. Like, she don't look like Whitney Houston. Whitney, da, 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 da. And I had Woody pull me to the side, who played Bobby Brown, because we were on set when they made the announcement. And he said, listen, they did the exact same thing to all of us who played the New Edition characters. He said, and then they got over it once they watched the movie. So that's just how people are. They're going to be opinionated. They want to voice their opinion. And because especially people love Whitney so much, if people didn't care about Whitney, I don't think people would have much of an opinion.
No.
But Whitney is like our goddess, you know? So
it's no, you better, like, you're playing the Queen of England, a Black England. Like, that to me, you're playing Princess Diana of the Black community. That's how Whitney Houston was for everybody. Not only the Black community, for anybody who loved music, she was Lady Di. And it's so crazy because Twitter can make you second guess your own performance. Like, I know I killed it on set today, but if I get 5 tweets about something, I'm like, damn, did I mess that up? Like,
that's why? Because our human nature goes to the negative. 5 out of 50, you know what I mean? Like, the probability.
Yeah.
So we just also have to learn, because those sometimes are people that are looking for attention. So I'm sure you were amazing. Don't let those 5 people tell you differently. You know what it is.
Damn. What you got coming up next? What set you on? I'm trying to figure it out back there.
I don't even know if I'm allowed to say, but I'm filming a movie, which is so great for me because I've been trying to get into films. But I'm excited to be here. And we just got, it was just announced that season 2 of Upshaw's got picked up. So
yes.
And what else? And then Blacklight Sketcher. We'll be filming season 3 of that this year. And hopefully that'll be out sooner than later. So that's good.
You guys, you can catch Gabrielle Dennis on any network at any time, because a bitch is booked. She is the motherfucking Wayne Brady.
If this pilot gets greenlit, then yes, you can hopefully catch me on network television too.
This is
making up. I'm eating all the crumbs that I've left on the trail, like trying to find my way back home. Like, I've been working at this a long time, and I'm finally like, I feel like I'm finally seeing the blooms come.
Yeah.
You know, the seeds that I planted are finally, and it's just been a great season for me, and one that I don't take for granted at all. I'm so blessed and so grateful.
But isn't it weird? Because I too feel the same way. Like, I'm finally starting to see the flowers that I planted in the ground, and now I'm walking past them every day and I see them slowly sprouting up. But isn't it crazy that I feel like God or the universe or whatever anyone believes in, you get it at the right time? Because if you had it 10 years ago, you would have squandered it, or your mind wouldn't be in the right place. You wouldn't have the same outlook that you have today. You would have been like, I'm not doing that, or I'll do that because it's a check. You wouldn't have been as prepared for all of the blessings if you would have gotten it earlier. Am I wrong?
Oh, 1,000. I say it all the time. Like, when I booked Rosewood, that's when it clicked that what's meant for me is meant for me. Like, I've said it before, but I really understood it to my core in that moment.
Yeah.
The roles that I thought I wanted, that I needed, and that I thought were perfect for me, that I was like, why didn't I get that? And when I got that role, I was like, this is why. And so, like you said, to your point, there's times where if you get what you thought you wanted when you weren't ready, you'll mm-hmm. lose it. Then your light dips, your light goes out, your little crop that you, those seeds you plant, now you got like a dead crop over here because you weren't prepared to tend to that garden, right? So then also emotionally, mentally, there's times where you have to be to a point where you're ready to handle it. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of things coming at you. And I feel like I'm a stronger person now than I was 10 years ago, where I'm ready and I'm a whole ass grown up. You know what I mean? Like, I understand how to navigate and to protect my peace. Because at the end of the day, as much as I love what I do, as much as I love this industry, that can't be the only thing that gets me going, gets me waking up every day.
Oh my God, you guys. I'm obsessed with you, and I'm going to go back and watch the game now that I know who you are, and I don't have to be mad at you anymore.
Forgive Janae. When they watch it now, they are more mature than they were. They're older than when they first watched it, and they see it differently. I'm like, wait a minute, Janae actually was not the problem. She never broke up home because they weren't together when Janae was in
Thank
the picture.
You.
They were actually a couple when she got pregnant, and they realized Derwin was a lot of issue, which a lot of times, unfortunately, I hate to say this, guys, but you guys
used men don't get
stirring the pot and causing the problems. And then the woman or the other woman or the whomever, she gets all the thrown in her face.
By the way, I love how you have that, like, you have that reaction ready because you have had to defend this character.
Yes, listen, I love me some Janae. And I people that love Janae who are single moms, I was like, Janae was about it. She didn't care about his money. She was about her thing. She did her thing. And she just was in love with the wrong person that wasn't ready for her. So, you know.
No, we stand Janae, and I was more jealous of Janae because Janae rocked that inverted bob. Like, it was a little bit longer, and it was.
How many people
was laid.
To salons and was like, I want the Janae bob. Like, stylists used to tell me, I was like, that is so crazy.
The bob was good. It was just, and it always was part of the character because it was not stiff.
No,
she knew her bob was bomb. She knew. It just was, she was the character. I feel like everybody wanted to hate her because she was a baby mama, but she was so smart and she was so independent, and she f***ed with Melanie when she needed to, just to prove to her that just because she was in med school, she wasn't better than her. It just was like, she was everything we wanted, and she was the last person we ever wanted, like, end up with. You know what I mean?
She was
like,
unbothered, and I think people just weren't ready for her. Like, they weren't ready.
We didn't have the language. Unbothered was not privy to us at that point. She was ahead of her time.
Yes, she was. And shout out to my first, that was my first weave, by the way.
That's great. By the way, that is nuts that that was your first forte into acting, because most people would have taken the character a different way.
I think also it was just on the page. It was just kind of like, she was strong, in my opinion. It was like, she came for money. She, you know, you date what you're around, you know? So she came from that experience. When Malik introduced her to Derwin, it was because she rode in that circle. It wasn't because she was a gold digger. It was just, she had money. She lived in the ville that they were in. You know what I mean? Like, she played, you know, so she was a part of that community. But for me, it was important to play the strength of her in that she didn't need a man. She didn't need a man's money. She likes those things. They're an asterisk to what the real deal is. She just wanted to be loved. Like, she got a man. Her daddy was the first man in her life who showed her she didn't need a man.
Yeah.
Like, that could do any better than she.
I love you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Congratulations to you too.
Hey, you guys, thank you again for joining us for another week of Just the Sip. And don't forget, rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast Tell all your friends about it. Hit me up on Instagram at Justin A. Sylvester. And as usual, we will see you next Wednesday for another episode of Just the Sip.